Debbie Budnick lives in Trout Lake, finally known to the locals as TL. And living in the Gorge has taught her that community is a superpower. I think that's a great statement for tonight. Debbie's guilty pleasure is, quote, feeding my liberal news media bias while sipping a cup of Covfefe, then searching for emotional salvation from our savior, the undercooked holy trinity of combination of butter, sugar, and flour. In other words, it's basically reading the news and eating cookie dough. But Debbie's story is called How Many Trout Lakers Does It Take To... And please welcome Debbie Budnick.
That is great. Is this working? Working? Can anybody not hear me? Okay, you're good. Thanks, Livable Hood River. We are. Thanks, Livable Hood River, for putting this on. So the 1999 graduating senior class from Danbury High School in Danbury, Connecticut, had about 500 people, and I was one of them. That also happens to be how many people live in the entire town of Trout Lake, where I am one of them. I never wanted to live in a town that small. I came to the area in 2006 to join AmeriCorps. I loved what I was doing. I met some amazing friends. And I also met Daniel Cassati, who became my AmeriScore. And he and I have been playing Little House in the Woods ever since. You need to know that country living is definitely not my default setting. There are people in Trout Lake who genuinely love the smell of dairy farms. I'm talking handful of silage. Ah, oh, it's cash money, baby. I am not one of those people. Trout Lakers love their burn piles and their bonfires, and smoke gives me migraines. I once had to call my parents to tell my mother that I was not coming home for Passover because I had to attend our mandatory chainsaw training. You're doing what? Bob, pick up the phone. It's Debbie. She says she's not coming for Pesach. I don't know. You talk to her. Like something about a chainsaw? I don't know what the hell she's doing out there. I asked myself that same question, and the voice in my head sounds exactly like that. But once I started paying attention to where I was, a small town at the base of a massive Cascade volcano known as the Sleeping Giant, I really started to appreciate Trout Lake. I love that it's a town that came together to raise thousands of dollars for a brand new state-of-the-art track at the school that's open for the whole community to use, including the cows next door who promptly broke through their fence, trampled, and shat all over it. And I love that I heard that story in line at the general store, which is where you go for your news. If you want gossip, you go to the hardware store. I was not supposed to say that. Anyway, but what I'm about to tell you sealed the deal for me. It's where I go instantly when people ask me about life in Trout Lake. In my opinion, it is the Trout Lakeiest Trout Lake story of them all. So one day, I get a text from Daniel while I'm at work, and the text says, you never know what you're going to come home to when you live in Trout Lake. And he's right. One day, I came home to him turning my old bicycle into a pedal-powered chicken plucker. So I get this text, and along with this text from his crappy old phone appears to be a picture of his truck in our driveway, and attached to his truck is a goat. We don't have goats. We've had chickens and ducks and turkeys and other. Into our yard and promptly shit all over. So I get this text from Daniel and I'm like, I don't know what this is, but I don't have time for your booty bullshit right now. I gotta go back to work. I come home that night around 6 or 7. Daniel's not home, he's working late, and I get a call on our phone, an actual phone, because we don't have stuff over at our house, so we have a landline. And a woman
myself, well, this is clearly someone's goat. It's a friendly goat. I can't just leave it here. I have to do something. So he walks the goat back to the main intersection, tying it up there, thinking, well, whoever's driving around the valley looking for it will for sure see it here. He ties the goat up. He starts walking back to her house, and all of a sudden, the goat starts screaming. And you're not getting a goat impression out of me. I'm from country, but not that kind of thing. But anyway, so the goat is screaming its head off. And Daniel thinks, well, it's a really hot day. It's a friendly goat. It's stressed. I can't just leave it here. I'll bring it home, and I'll drive it up into town on my way to work, and I'll tie it up at the general store. Because that's what you do when you've either lost something or found something or you need information. You go to the G store, So he thinks he's going to tie it up at the G store. As he's walking the goat back to our house, our neighbor, Dave Sala, comes driving by and stops to talk, as you must stop to talk. And Daniel says, hey, you know anybody who's lost a goat? And Dave says, well, you know, it must belong to Walter and Judy Skelton, because they're the only people around here on this end of the valley who have goats. Daniel's like, okay, I can drop this goat off on my way back to work. So he takes the goat back to our house, gets it loaded up in the back of the truck, goes inside to have some lunch. He comes back out to leave, and the goat is standing on top of the truck. He's standing out there, standing. He was like, well, okay, so I can't drive this thing up in, you know, to the skeleton, but I can't drive it like this. The only thing for me to do is bike it. So he decides he's going to bike the goat over to Walt and Judy's skeleton house. It's maybe 3/4 of a mile, not too bad. So he's biking down the road with this goat, and alongside him comes a big white pickup with two border collies in the back. Car stops, roll down the window. This is Keith Kress. Keith looks at Daniel, biking down the road with his goat, and Keith says, you seen any of my cows? And he's like, well, no, but you know anybody who's lost a goat? And Keith says, well, no, but if you don't find the owner, give me a call and I'll make some tacos. He rings the doorbell, tries to see if there's someone there he can talk to. He can hear music in the house. There's a car in the driveway. He knows someone's home, so he figures, all right, I gotta get back to work. I'm just gonna tie this goat up, and then I'm gonna head back up to work. So he does just that. And around 6 or 7 o'clock, he's got a break from his cheesemake, and he decides he's gonna go up to the Trotley Country Inn to get some dinner. The inn is our 100-year-old watering hole. We love it very much. So he goes up to the inn, and it's taco night. And so he decides he's going to get some dinner. As he's walking up to the inn, he looks at the porch, and he sees none other than Walter and Judy Skelton. And he thinks to himself, oh, this is awesome. Like, this is amazing timing. I can check in with them about their goat. This is great, right? I did a really good neighborly thing. You know, he's expecting heroes welcome. So he walks up to Walter and Judy Skelton, and he can kind of hear it. It seems like they're actually talking about this goat, which he thinks is kind of interesting. Like, you know, he gives Walter one of those pats on the back, you know what guys do? And
Debbie Budnick, everybody.